Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Athletic Soccer Show. I am Jeff Reuter, and even though deadline day is ongoing as we record this, Leeds United had the foresight to give us something that we can talk about ahead of time, a transfer that was worthy of truly diving in on two sides of the ocean to figure out and just parse through how much this makes sense for the club. And so I am joined here by Phil Hay, our expert on Leeds United, and we're talking Weston McKennie, yet another U.S. international who is heading over to join Jesse Marsh's Major Leeds Soccer project. Phil, how's everything on your side?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for having me on, and apologies to people for my accent. I haven't brought a translator with me. but if you're struggling, watch Trainspotting, and by the end of that, you'll think I've got the Queen's English.
I grew up watching Craig Ferguson's late night talk show, so actually I will be able to serve
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to me first about how this move came about. I think that you and I have each written off of this move already over on The Athletic. Go ahead and you can get both the backstory of how this came together, as well as some analysis of how he'll fit. We'll obviously be touching on topics from each article in this podcast. But how did this move come together? It seemed a little bit of a surprise that Leeds would be looking for a midfielder who could actually not just be a depth piece, but truly compete for starting minutes down the stretch.
It's both indicative of the way Leeds act, but also, I think, indicative of a bit of a shift in their approach to transfers, and also particularly the January transfer window. The line that has always come out of Leeds going back two or three, 4 years, really to the start of Andrea Radrizzani's time as chairman of the club, was that January was poor time for business, wasn't a time when they wanted to do much business. Ideally, when it came to recruitment, they would do what they felt they needed to do in the summer. And January would be a time where if there was an urgency or a desperation or I guess a specific target that came up who they'd been looking at for a while and wanted to do, then they would. But, you know, the running joke in Leeds, and this actually goes back, you know, best part of a decade, was that it's transfer deadline day, or as we call it in Leeds, Tuesday, you know, because nothing ever happened. And this window has been very different. But at the start of it, the priorities for Leeds were a left back, or at least a left-sided defender, somebody who could cover left back, and also a forward. And they ticked those two boxes with Max Fuhrer from RB Salzburg, left-sided centre-back really, but had been playing at left back for Salzburg. Jorginho Rutter from Hoffenheim. Rutter, very much a number nine, but can play out wide as a kind of wide forward as opposed to a winger, you know. And that for Leeds was their two boxes ticked, really. But there was always this lingering possibility that they might do a central midfielder. And actually, we can come on to this, but if you look at the squad, it does make sense, not only to sign a centre mid, but to sign one with McKennie's calibre and pedigree, somebody who can make an immediate impact on the team. And they did look at Azzedine Unahi, who's gone from Angers in France to Marseille. And while that move is costing Marseille around about €8 million, so I think somewhere in the region of $8 million, $10 million. Yeah. The price being quoted to Leeds and Napoli was much higher, twice as much. And Leeds didn't think it was good value. They left it alone. And then about 2 weeks ago, McKennie got wind of the fact that Leeds had an eye on him. As it happened, the director of football at Leeds, Victor Orta, had first looked at him when he was at Schalke and had thought about making a bid for him in 2020, but he'd gone to Juventus. And, you know, that shelved it for the time being. But it was really last week, the start of last week, where inquiry was made. Receptive response from Juventus, which put in motion the chain of events of negotiating what exactly the transfer was going to look like, you know, what the structure of it was going to look like. And key to it was the fact that McKennie was interested. You know, he was going from a Champions League club, but he was keen and he fancied it at Leeds. And, you know, from speaking to people and asking about the deal, there were quite clearly enough voices at Leeds for him to speak to and to be convinced by that it was a good move for him. So last night it was confirmed, loan deal with an option to sign him permanently, and I think there's a very strong chance that that option will get activated.
There are some pretty obvious connective tissues here between Weston McKennie and then his new locker room, which he's jumping into. But I think just more broadly, we're to a point now where Jesse Marsh is not going to be seen as Bob Bradley 2.0 in terms of his impact on a Premier League club. Now that he's actually had the luxury of transfer windows, something Bob Bradley never had at Swansea, have you seen a marked difference in how Marsh hopes the club operates in the transfer market or tries to work with the club compared to what Bielsa was doing? Have you started to get a sense of how that dynamic with Victor Orta has changed with Jesse Marsh?
Well, without a doubt, I think Marsh is easier to recruit for than Bielsa. Mm. Without a doubt, too, though, there has been more money spent in this period on Marsh than there was on average for Bielsa. It wasn't that they didn't sign Bielsa, and you have to remember that two of Bielsa's seasons were in the Championship where transfer expenditure was going to be lower. You cannot discount the fact that last summer they sold Rafinha to Barcelona, Calvin Phillips to Manchester City for around about £90 million. So losing two of the best players in the squad in return for a huge amount of cash coming in. But they have committed all of that money to players. They did that last summer. In this window, if you factor in McKennie's transfer fee would fall in the next window, in the summer, if they activate it for around about $35 million. But this window has effectively been, in UK pounds, £70 million investment. It's a lot of money for a club like Leeds. And I think it really puts them in a position now where, they've expected better results of Marsh anyway. The results have not been great this season. Leeds have really struggled to get going. I think it puts them in a position now where they can expect more again, and I think they can adequately say, look, you have been supported in the transfer market. A lot of the signings who've come in, I mean, all of them obviously go through Marsh in the end and are approved by him. There are discussions about every single player. But as much as Marsh will say from time to time, these are not my signings, they're the club's signings. It's very hard to look at Tyler Adams, Brendan Aaronson, McKennie, Christensen, Buber, players who've come from Salzburg that he's worked with before, and not think that, he's going back to players he knows or players who will fit into his system. So without any question, he has been backed on that front. He's also been backed by the club in the sense that they've resisted the dissent around him and they've resisted pressure to change, pressure to sack him. But as it stands now, I think the argument that they don't have the resources they need or they don't have a good enough squad to stay up or to be better placed in the league, I think that will wear more and more thin if they can't get results. But on the flip side, Marsh has been talking recently about his sense that momentum is building despite the absence of results, that he thinks the performances are improving. He looks at a lot of the data and the metrics and he thinks they're pointing in a lot of respects in the right direction. So I think he will be saying to himself that, with McKennie on board, with Reuter up front, with Vuber, who looks like a really confident defender, that there should be the potential now to turn the corner and to turn it quite quickly.
I think that there is also something to be said about that connection. We already touched on it with Jesse Marsh, obviously the common nationality, that sort of experience that he has with Tyler Adams in the engine room of the United States men's national team. There was that fantastic photo of Adams and McKennie and there were children that Tyler Adams had tweeted out.
Adams was at Elland Road last night to welcome him. He surprised him. Didn't know he was going to be there. And in the end, he did the interview, Adams, for the club's official TV station, LUTV. And I was told that, that there'd been obviously conversations between Adams and McKennie and that Adams had been pretty influential in, because there'd been other clubs who'd been interested in McKennie. And from what I'm told, he'd never really been attracted to the offers that had come in or the suggestions that had come in from, non-Champions League or non-European competition clubs in this division. But Leeds seemed to be different. And, there was obviously Marsh who spoke to him, Adams as well. I think, again, from what I understand, there was a good kind of explanation of what the future was likely to look like under 49ers Enterprises, the investment arm of San Francisco 49ers, who expect to buy the club and to own it outright, or certainly in a majority sense, in the not-so-distant future. What will the future look like? What is their vision? What do they plan to do? And as a complete package, it certainly seemed to sell itself to McKennie, who was interesting when we chatted to him last night, because, he's going from a big club in Juventus, and people will probably have seen that Juventus are in a lot of trouble at the moment. And for those who haven't followed it, they've had an investigation into financial irregularities. They've had a 15-point deduction in Serie A. They're in a bad way. But they are still the powerhouse in in Italy, and you would assume that they will recover and get back to that level. But, you know, McKennie was saying to us that he felt that his personality, kind of outgoing personality, would be more accepted in the Premier League and also at Leeds. And he also said that tactically, there were times at Juventus where he felt like he was on a string, as he put it. You know, it was so disciplined and it was so strict in the way that they set up, that they didn't like him doing his 60-yard runs and his, as he put it, his kind of frantic, hectic, you know, approach to football. He thinks this will be a really good fit for him. And I just got the sense from him last night that it wasn't as if he'd been in two minds about this. I think he really, really wanted to come.
And I think that there's something interesting. He left Schalke for Juventus just before they started their tailspin to get to the second Bundesliga as well. So he doesn't necessarily have that experience, but he has seen a club that's probably been in a worse way than Leeds has. Leeds, obviously, people in the club, outside the club, the fan base, what have you, really bought into the Bielsa revolution, of course. There's now this like American revolution, no pun intended, that's really been, you know, gaining even more and more and more merit to it and weight. Is there still that sort of confidence in the direction of that Americanism? Because I there are a lot of clubs, a lot of fan bases who they would see American ownership, American manager, more American players and say, oh boy, here we go, marketing over results.
Yeah, I think you probably have to be careful in assuming that this is a deliberate strategy in terms of Americanization. Marsh, for example, was not the choice of 49ers Enterprises, even though it would be very easy to put that connection together. He was the choice of Victor Orta, who director of football at Leeds, who was appointed originally by Radrizzani, the current chairman, and had been in touch with Marsh for about 2 years before Bielsa was sacked and Marsh replaced him. And that will sound strange, but the situation with Bielsa was that he worked on 12-month contracts year to year. So you were never quite certain if at the end of one particular season, you were going to have to replace him there. And then if he decided not to extend. So Leeds, I guess, is a means of due diligence and common sense, had to maintain some form of list of options of coaches that they could go to if they suddenly needed to find a replacement. And Marsh was the one who Arthur singled out. Marsh was the one who, by analysing the data and the way he played, particularly at Salzburg, that he decided that he really, really wanted, he thought the club should go for. And you know, it's almost the same really with the players who have come in. I don't get the sense at all that the 49ers are pushing the idea that they should be going after Aronson or they should be going after Adams or they should be going after McKennie because they are US nationals and because, for example, they might be very good marketing tools in the run-up to the World Cup in 2026 because it, you know, it helped. Without a doubt, that's true, you know, and it does help, I think, to market Leeds on the other side of the water. It does help to expand Leeds' profile within America and to attract a bigger American audience. But I think when it comes to it, the key decision here is, do they think they're good signings? Do they think they're good footballers? And I have to say, if you look at the league table, it's quite obvious that Leeds do not have the luxury at the moment of saying, let's sign players for commercial reasons or, you know, reasons out with what's going on the pitch, because they you know, they need results. They need good players. McKennie, I think, is a really good signing for them and exactly what they should be doing.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We look in a separate article about how he could fit into a three-man midfield, and this is something that Jesse March has been emphasizing far more on the back of the World Cup than he had before the break started in November. Do you see this as a very natural midfield trio, him joining Mark Rocha and then Tyler Adams as well?
It feels like it could work, without a doubt. I mean, McKennie last night was talking about how box-to-box he likes to be, and Adams has a kind of box-to-box style, but I think in a slightly less dynamic way, if that makes sense. And I don't mean lower intensity, but I think what you'll get from McKennie is a bit more of an attacking thrust, whereas Adams is very, very good at sweeping up, at marshalling the midfield, at pressing, counter-pressing, tackles, interceptions, all that stuff that lays a platform to play off. Mark Rocha is, he's the player you should look to pull the strings. Progressive passing scores really highly. That's what he likes to do. He likes to get on the ball and spray it about. Long-range passing, short-range passing, in a way, again, that somebody like Adams doesn't. So I think if they get the balance right and the positioning right, I think that could definitely work with a three. Marsh, as a rule, has been going 4-2-3-1. He can still do that with this. Whether that allows him to include all three, I'm not entirely sure, and I think he will want to. But on top of that, signing Ruta, added to a really, really big crop of forwards means that he has the option of a front two, a front three. He can, a front four in a 4-2-3-1. There is actually now a lot of tactical versatility on offer with these players. And I think people will look to him to use that. He is rigid in the way he likes to play. He does have a very, very defined style. And there's been a huge debate, still is over here, about how well it's worked and whether it's likely to work going forward. But I don't think in any way you could say that they don't have the players to be okay now. I think this squad should be performing fairly well.
If you're just looking at an 11 and you have to drop an attacker here, most frequent quartet, obviously, recently certainly, has been Jack Harrison, Brendan Aaronson, Rodrigo, and then Willy Nyanto. Who's the odd one out? Who becomes the first option off the bench if you're calling the shots here?
It becomes incredibly difficult because you've got Patrick Bamford coming back from injury.
Right.
He's had a long, long stretch where he hasn't been properly fit, but he looked extremely good in the cup game at Accrington on Saturday. He looked like actual Patrick Bamford, looked like what you've been waiting to see for ages. And if he starts to score and play well, he puts a hell of a lot of pressure on players who are in the team. Selection-wise, that becomes tricky. Ruta is record signing, around about £30 million, $35 million. I would say, do you leave him out? How do you leave him out? What do you do there? You have Luis Sinisterra, who came in from Feyenoord, looks very good, has looked very good on his day. I think, again, another player who's tough to leave out. Sinisterra has been injured for a while too, and I think this is the point, really, that with Crescenzio Somerville coming back, he was a young winger who came in from Feyenoord, but has scored important goals this season, has definitely got better again and put himself right in the picture. I've done a piece for the Athletic on the way the squad's changed in the last 8 months, and it has pretty drastically.
Yeah,
one of the things I noted in it was the fact that in a 4-2-3-1, you could actually pick two different units of four up front. You have enough players where you could have a different three and a different one quite easily. So that was the kind of tone of the piece I did after Accrington at the weekend, was what is Marsh's front three or front four, and actually what's yours? If you're looking at it, who do you pick? What is the best? What is the best blend? And working that out is going to be actually quite a challenge, but it's a good position to be in because, quite honestly, Leeds have gone through quite a while prior to this point where the anxiety has been about a lack of number nines, a lack of attacking options, and it's it's been a handicap for them. So at that end of the field, they're in a much better shape.
Is there an expectation? Obviously, the purchase option, one of the factors that would incentivize that to be sprung would be avoiding relegation, right?
Yes.
And I think that all year, the goal has been, from preseason, reading your preseason coverage as well, was not to be in the relegation scrap to nearly the longevity or the extent that they were in 21, 22. And yet here we are, ostensibly looking at them possibly being in the same spot. Is there a changed expectation with all of this investment, with all of this, you know, increased depth? I mean, we're also looking at Diogo Montero, who came in from Servette today as we're recording this. Again, more of a future prospect, but all the same, still more investment in both the present and the future of the roster. Has the expectation changed at all? Do you view this as a, we need to feel confident that we will have Premier League standing secured by March, anything of the sort as a result?
Absolutely. I mean, I was talking about this on the podcast, the weekly podcast I do about Leeds United, about the fact that if you look at Fulham at the moment, Fulham are beyond 30 points, have a really strong start to the season. If you rely on the data and the metrics and the sort of XG comparison, the chances are that they've got a bit of a slump around the corner just to go by the numbers. You know, they're probably outperforming what they should be doing. But even if Fulham were to take, say, 10 points before the end of the season, finish on 41, 42 points, they'd be happy with the season because they've felt safe for so much of it. If Leeds finish the season on 41, 42 points, they'll be happy to stay up, but it will still feel like a year that's been pretty fraught. And I guess perception and perspective is quite big in this. One of the reasons why, from what we're told anyway, that the transition of ownership from Radrizzani to 49ers Enterprises hasn't happened yet is that there is still the lingering issue of relegation in the background, which is to say that Leeds at the moment are valued at around about £500 million. If they were relegated, they'd be, you know, a much smaller fraction of that in the EFL. They just would not be worth that amount of money. So naturally, 49ers Enterprises have to ask themselves, do we want to buy a club that might lose X amount of value in the next 6 months without a caveat or without some contingency clause with Radrizzani or whatever else? And the answer realistically is no, we don't. You know, they want to take on a Premier League club because that's what opens the door to stadium development and European football and, you know, growth of the club's size and financial cost and everything else. So it is essential that they're not really a club, Leeds, who can yo-yo, as we call it in England, you know, bounce between the Championship and the Premier League. Now that they're here and been out of this division for 16 years, they need to stay in it. And on top of that, they do not have a fan base that would tolerate yo-yoing either. You know, the fan base expect good things of them. And rightly, I think, you know, it's a historically big club, Leeds, who have underperformed for a long, long time prior to getting promoted again. So yes, I mean, they need to move forward. And Radrizzani said it himself at the start of the season, there's no risk of relegation. That was his comment. He just said it was impossible. He wants to see Leeds finish 10th to 14th. I think it's a reasonable ambition.
Yeah, I think, I mean, speaking as a Bournemouth fan here, there are certainly clubs lower on the table right now who look far less inspiring at this point of the season, Southampton included as well, of course. Phil provided the meat and potatoes with a piece breaking down how this transfer came together, how this loan came together, and all the machinations in the back rooms and in the future that could bring Weston McKennie to Leeds on a permanent basis. I came in with a confectionery dessert of tactical analysis, data, why he is a good fit alongside Mark Rocha and Tyler Adams in the midfield, and how he does actually help despite being one of the least influential passers of the ball in the big five leagues of Europe. Phil, thank you so much. I know it's deadline day. We've got to get you back on the clock here. Leeds never is done this window, apparently. But anything else that you would like to bring up on McKennie or something else that might be in the works for you?
No, they've been looking today a little bit of centre-back cover. They've let Diego Llorente go to Roma on loan. That hadn't been announced last time I looked, but it's very much on the cards and is going. But it might well be that we have a fairly quiet finish after an eventful window. The hope was certainly that for all the interest from Leicester City and Jack Harrison, that Jack Harrison would stay tonight.
Well, sounds like a Tuesday to me then. All right. Well, Phil, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And thank you for listening to The Athletic Soccer Show. Keep us on your feeds. We will be back with more probably recap of both this transfer window and then looking ahead to the domestic seasons of the NWSL and Major League Soccer and all other things going on in American soccer. Please make sure that you subscribe to The Athletic if you don't, and have a great day.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.